Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be talking with a law student from a rural village of India, and we'll see that some of the experiences he describes may be more universally applicable than you at first might think.
We'll speak with Rahul Bajaj about some of the cultural and technical barriers faced by the blind in India and how he's been able to overcome these challenges and what he's learned from doing so. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Rahul.
If you are a disabled person in a developing country, I think one of the things that one needs to really be mindful of and be cognizant of is that in a world that is essentially designed for the sighted, it is really hard to thrive as a person with a disability. At the same time, such an experience equips you with a set of problem-solving skills and the ability to think out of the box that others don't possess. What I have recognized is that those skills can really help you transform impediments into opportunities for professional growth and advancement. So if one looks at one's challenges as a disabled person from that vantage point, I think one can go very far in life.
And I think that's generally true no matter where you are in the world. If you develop these skills to be successful and overcome some of the challenges that you're faced with, these skills are more applicable to many areas of your life and profession. So they can serve you very well if you use them correctly.
Let's start by meeting Rahul.
My name is Rahul Bajaj. I am a 22-year-old final year law student from India who happens to be blind since birth. I am currently interning at a commercial law firm in New Delhi called Trilegal, where I will be working after I finish my legal education.
Do you have any useful vision?
I am blind since birth, and I have basically what they call form perception, which essentially means that I can recognize some forms and shapes, but I'm, for instance, not able to distinguish between people or recognize colors very clearly, etc. So for all intents and purposes, I am fully blind, and I rely entirely on adaptive technology.
And what types of assistive technologies do you most make use of?
Broadly, I use two things. One is a laptop which has JAWS on it, and other software. For instance, in the work that I do, we are extensively required to deal with PDF documents which are in the form of images. So I often have to convert them into Word by using an OCR engine. The one that I use is FindReader. And the second thing which I use is the iPhone, which is also an immensely powerful tool of empowerment, I think, because it's helped me do a lot of things that I could not do before I had it.
Do you use Braille at all? Is that a common means of communicating in India?
Yeah, so I never learned Braille as a child, and it's only recently that I have started learning it because I have recognized that Braille has its own uses. Because, for instance, as a lawyer, when I finish my legal education and start arguing in courts at some point in time, I would be required to make notes for oral arguments, etc. So in those contexts, blind people tell me that Braille is quite useful. So to that end, I have started learning Braille recently, but since I started doing it so late in my life, it doesn't really play an instrumental role in helping me function on an everyday basis.
Well, as a blind professional myself, I found Braille to be very useful in terms of taking notes at meetings so I could quietly do that. And then also in terms of giving presentations, I would also use Braille index cards to cue me about what was on my slides or what I wanted to talk about, and then sometimes have more extensive notes in Braille on a refreshable Braille display or Braille note taker. That would be useful. So Braille can be useful even if you don't use it all the time.
And what kind of activities do you enjoy in your spare time?
Yeah, so I enjoy reading non-legal stuff a lot. I love watching movies, or at least listening to them. And I also enjoy swimming. That's something that I enjoy whenever I have some free time. I should tell you, though, that as a blind person or as a person with a disability in India, pursuing recreational activities is often a far greater challenge than pursuing academic endeavors is. Because, for instance, if you want to obtain academic material in an accessible format, there are people who will come forward and help you do that. But the common perception is that as a blind person, you should stick to the bare minimum. And, you know, it's not really essential that you have access to recreational activities. So that often gets the backseat. And I have personally found it very hard to find trainers, for instance, who could teach me how to swim. And, you know, I have often been rejected, in fact, downright by clubs, etc., because of my visual impairment. So that's just something I wanted to share.
Oh, that's an interesting comment, though. I wouldn't have thought about that.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is about some of the barriers Rahul has faced as a young blind man in India and how he's overcome them.
Today, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about what it's like growing up as a blind individual in India, going through the educational system, and to give people a flavor for the kinds of special challenges that you might have had to overcome. You know, we take a lot for granted in the U.S. here about the services and the assistance available to the visually impaired. Can you tell us a little bit about your early childhood education?
Sure. So I grew up in a fairly small town in basically what you would call a tier two city, which is located at the very center of India. It's located basically in the same state in which Bombay is. And we had very limited access to information about what a blind person could or could not do at that point in time. I studied in a mainstream school in my hometown. But since, like I said, we had limited access to information, most of the tools that we developed, most of the coping strategies that we developed were on a trial and error basis. I used to take the help of a sighted assistant who used to go with me to school, who used to take notes, etc., because at that time we weren't aware that adaptive technology existed. And the same assistant would also help me complete my homework, write exams, etc.
When did you become introduced to adaptive technology?
I began learning adaptive technology when I was in sixth grade in 2006, I guess. And after that, I started using it more extensively in the sense that I began getting my books scanned. I began looking at more online content for academic purposes. That was what kind of helped me become more independent. I should also mention here that while schools in India generally don't refuse to admit a student with a disability, after this child is admitted into a mainstream school, getting integrated into the mainstream educational community is often the greatest challenge. That's at least what my experience tells me.
So was your situation somewhat special in the fact that you were mainstreamed as opposed to going to a special school for the visually impaired?
So the only special school that we had for the visually impaired in my hometown was not actually an English medium school. The medium of instruction in that school was the vernacular language of the state. That's part of the reason why I did not go to the special school. I do think that going to a mainstream school did help me acquire some skills that I would not have been able to acquire if I had gone to a special school. For instance, it helped me learn how to essentially thrive in a world that is designed for the sighted, as opposed to living within my own little silo, whether it is participating in exams or socializing. All those activities I think I was able to do in a in a better way because I studied in a mainstream school. But again, I don't think that I was able to enjoy the same kind of school life that my sighted colleagues were able to enjoy, because like I said, many schools are willing to admit students, but integration is a challenge.
Yeah, so there are pros and cons to mainstreaming. I mean, I myself went to a school for the blind until I was in fifth grade, but was later mainstreamed, and I think that was a very positive experience. But I guess I understand from what you're saying, some of the social aspects could be somewhat limiting in that situation.
That's exactly right.
Were these special services and technologies provided by the state or the government, or were these things that you had to provide on your own?
So that is actually one of the interesting differences between living as a blind person in India in contradistinction to living as a blind person in the West. Namely that in India, you don't really have a lot of assistance from the government to gain access to adaptive technology or to the tools that you need to thrive. It's not the case that we don't have schemes for the distribution of aids and appliances to the disabled, but most of those schemes focus on distributing stuff that is often outdated, for example, braille slates and stylus and stuff like that, which is not really as useful as a laptop with screen reading software in today's world. That's one thing. And the second factor is that you have to be below a certain income ceiling in order to avail of those facilities. And since I happen to come from a relatively well-off family, I wasn't really eligible to claim any of those benefits.
So you were fairly fortunate in your home situation then.
Yes, I would say that coming from a financially well-off background has been a major factor that has allowed me to lead a more productive and fulfilling life than I would have been able to do if that were not the case. In India, as you might know, there is great income disparity, even more than, you know, what you see in the West. So having access to financial resources, I think, is absolutely indispensable for being able to access the tools that you need as a blind person.
You know, it's interesting that I think that not only do the poor not have the same access to these materials that, you know, some more well-off people do, but also in the poorer communities, there tends to be a higher incidence of blindness due to the lack of medical facilities and access to medical care.
Where do you get your audio reading material from?
There is an organization in India called the National Association for the Blind, the NAB, which scans books on a large scale for students who are visually challenged. But I haven't really used their services extensively because the turnaround time that it takes for them to get back to you with a scanned book is often greater than what my curriculum or academic needs allow. So the way I typically function is that I get my books scanned on my own or do it myself. And that's one. And secondly, I reach out to people who have studied law or who studied the same subjects that I am studying. I'm talking about students with disabilities, of course, and very often they have access to the material that I need. So that helps me immensely.
And then your recreational reading, you get that in audio, or you also scan print books?
I actually don't enjoy audiobooks all that much, to be very frank, because I find that it does not give me the kind of flexibility that adaptive technology does. I'm kind of averse to the idea of using audiobooks for any purpose. So I generally scan books that I want to read for recreational purposes as well. And I use the Amazon Kindle on the iPhone quite extensively. So that helps me kind of read books for recreational purposes.
We've done a number of episodes about Bookshare providing electronic books to the visually impaired, and they service people around the world, but with different restrictions because of the copyright rules. And I'm wondering how much of that material is useful to you, because they also do a number of textbooks and have partnerships with textbook publishers.
They do. And I was a member of Bookshare India at one point in time, But most of the books that I wanted at that point in time weren't available on the Bookshare India platform on account of copyright restrictions, as you rightly note. So that's why I sort of stopped trying to use that platform to access books. But in light of the Marrakesh Treaty that was recently ratified by the 20th country, which is sort of a prerequisite for it to come into force, I'm quite hopeful that there will be greater cross-border sharing of books, which will help people like me who live in developing countries have access to the same books that people in the developed world have.
That took a long time to come about, but it should be quite helpful to a lot of people.
Yes, and in India, in fact, on account of the advocacy initiatives of some lawyers with disabilities and lawyers in general, we have a set of robust and progressive provisions in our Copyright Act, which are in line with the Marrakesh Treaty. So the moment the treaty gets enacted into law by the developed world, I think we should be moving forward on that fairly soon.
So you talked about coming from a relatively small town, and we talked a lot about education, but it's also important to be mobile and to be able to get to and from work and other places. And I'm wondering if you could comment on mobility around India and in places you've been. How hard is it to get around? What is public transportation like?
I do use the cane, so that's kind of the principal tool that I use for navigating places, etc., independently. But one of the great advantage and disadvantage, I guess, in my situation is that since I come from a economically well-off background, I have access to a car and a chauffeur on most occasions. So that helps me get to places. But the downside to that is that if you use your own transportation, sometimes when that is not available to you, you kind of get stuck and it's really difficult to navigate independently. One thing I should add is that in the Indian context, contrary to what one sees in the US, there is a great emphasis on acting in ways that are acceptable to one's family and that are sort of accepted by one's family. So the focus on autonomy and independence that one sees in the West is not really present in India. And the upshot of that is that sometimes, and I have personally experienced this to some extent, one's family is well-intentioned, but you need to be assertive in order to function independently and in order to ensure that despite their well-intentioned suggestions, which often result in them being overprotective, you are able to do things the way you want. So you have to walk a rather tight rope, I think.
You talked about the fact that you're interning at a law firm. How are you accepted there as a visually impaired person?
So I have interned in a number of law firms and in a number of lawyers' offices since I started studying law almost 4 years ago now. I started studying law in 2012. We have a 5-year law course in India. So on the whole, my experience has been varied. At the place where I'm currently interning, the law firm where I'll be working once I graduate, like I said, the experience has been quite positive and they've been quite willing to accommodate my needs and give me the kind of work that helps me leverage my strengths. But at other places where I have interned, the experience has often been mixed. One of the things that I have recognized is that, again, like I said, people are well-intentioned, but they tend to bring to the table certain stereotypes and assumptions. For instance, at a very popular law firm in India, one of India's leading law firms in litigation where I interned last time around, I was told that, you know, I would be better off doing a desk job as opposed to litigating in courts because the kind of work that you're required to do in court involves a lot of running around, etc., which is not really suitable for a person with a disability. So it's frustrating when you hear people say that, you know, even though they don't know what kind of skills, talents, and ability you bring to the table.
How have you handled it when you've run into people with those kinds of attitudes?
I think that it's incredibly important to be assertive, to learn the importance of self-advocacy, because without that, one is really likely to get crushed by the system in India. as a disabled person.
And I think those are important attributes no matter where you are. It may be more important in the situation in which you find yourself, mm-hmm. but I think in general, you know, most of the sighted world, they haven't interacted a lot with visually impaired people. They don't know what you need, what you can do. They have certain stereotypes and assumptions built in. And so it's really up to you to educate them and be proactive, propose solutions rather than present them with a problem. And that's a really important skill that I think a visually impaired person has to have in general, on top of any other skills that they have for doing the job in particular.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because there is a widely held belief in India that for a disabled person, shifting to the West would be a panacea because everything is hunky-dory for the disabled in the West. But in my interactions with the friends that I have in the US and in other developed countries, I have come to recognize that that is very often not the case, because the challenges that someone in my position faces are very similar to the challenges that I think a disabled college student would face in the US as well. The challenges that someone at the bottom of the economic ladder would face, I think, would be much greater. And I don't think there can be a comparison between those two kinds of challenges. But the kind of challenges that I face, I don't think are materially different from a person in the West would have to face.
So you said a little while ago that some of the people at various law firms were trying to steer you into certain types of law that they thought would be more appropriate for a blind attorney. What field of law do you hope to go into?
At this point in time, I am quite interested in commercial law. In the firm where I am working right now, I am working on commercial law. And that is what I'll be doing for at least the next couple of years after I finish my legal education. I am also quite interested in constitutional and administrative law. So I don't really know what I'll be doing 5 to 10 years down the line. But the way I plan to do it is to eliminate the fields of law that I know for sure that I am not going to go into, criminal law being at the forefront. That's the approach that I am following at this point in time.
Well, it sure is nice to have options.
Yeah, and the law is one profession which, based on my experience, I would say there are very few things in the legal profession that are intrinsically inaccessible. So it's not really that important to take cognizance of one's accessibility needs while choosing a branch of law that one wants to specialize in.
Do you have anything that's similar or equivalent to the Americans with Disabilities Act that we've got?
We do have a Persons with Disabilities Act of 1995 in India, but the law is by no means as robust and progressive as the Americans with Disabilities Act, because it does not cover the private sector, nor does it take into cognizance the technological advancements that have happened since 1995. So that's the reason why we really don't have a progressive disability law. In recent years, the government has drafted a new disability law, which, because of the advocacy campaign that lawyers have spearheaded, has been substantially refined and is in a fairly robust shape at this point in time. So we are hopeful that when that law gets passed, we will have a strong legal framework to uphold the rights of the disabled in India.
That would be nice.
Yes, it would be, because at this point in time, as a person with a disability in India, if you are discriminated against by someone in the private sector, there's really no legal remedy that you have. If it's the public sector, you can always take them to court under the Constitution or under the Disabilities Act that we have. But there are no such obligations on the private sector. So that's a major gap that has to be filled, I think, by the law.
Now for this week's final segment, how to reach Rahul, how to find some of his writings, mostly about legal topics, and other resources that may be of interest or use to you.
So if people wanted to connect with you to share ideas and thoughts, Is there a way they could do that?
Sure. They could email me. My email ID is rahul.bajaj1038@gmail.com. I'll spell that out. rahul.bajaj1038@gmail.com. Or they could reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter as well. My Twitter handle is rahul400.
When he suggested you could find him on Facebook, I tried to search for him by name, but it turns out his name is pretty common. And if you want to find him on Facebook, he's Rahul Bajaj 138.
Do you have a webpage or a blog where you might direct people?
I actually write for a blog, but that's a legal blog, an intellectual property blog. It's called SpicyIP, S-P-I-C-Y-I-P. So it's an intellectual property blog for which I write every week.
Are there any other resources that might be helpful to people that you'd like to share with our listeners?
If they want to learn more about how persons with disabilities operate in India, they could look at the XRCVC, which is the Xavier's Resource Center for the Visually Challenged in India, or Enable India, which is an organization based in Bangalore, which does some really excellent work on disability issues. And the third organization is the one that I told you about earlier, which is the National Association for the Blind, which is based in New Delhi.
And as usual, you can find links to all of the resources mentioned in this show by going to the show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. And I also wanted to mention that we've done a number of episodes of Eyes on Success where we've talked with blind people in a variety of professions that you might not think may be accessible to the visually impaired, but yet they are. So there are many career opportunities. And if you want to find some of those shows, go to our search field on our website and just type in the word jobs or careers, and you'll come up with a list of shows along with summaries to those shows and links to the audio and show notes for those episodes. So check out some of those professions. They can be very rewarding careers for visually impaired people and may get you thinking in some new directions.
That's it for show number 1646. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about updates to Android accessibility. Android smartphones have become much more accessible to the visually impaired over the years, but are they accessible as an iPhone yet? Is it time to reconsider? We'll address these questions and others when we speak with Anna Garza, also known as Access Anna, author of a new book called Getting Started with Android, about using Android devices with TalkBack. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.